welcome to Listen to Older Voices, a program produced for Uniting Wesley and podcast through the Toorak Times and TAG. It's always a pleasure to bring you, through their stories, the life and times of older people in our community. All very interesting, all very different, and all very entertaining. This is a special Baby Boomers edition. Hello, and thank you for joining me on another remarkable story in the ongoing series of Listen to Older Voices. I'm Rob Greaves, and this is the fourth and final program featuring the life and times of Normie Rowe. Normie's story started 3 weeks ago as the 1,000th Listen to Older Voices program, and what a journey we've been on. We've learned much about this Melbourne-born boy, who was born in 1947 and came from an unassuming working-class background, with loving and supporting parents who had a love and appreciation for music. Exposed at a very early age to music in the home, Normie's love and appreciation for a broad palette of music styles was also supplemented from his listening to the radio. He went on to carve out a seriously remarkable career as a singer and performer, releasing many singles and albums with great success. In the 1970s, he was forced by a rigged ballot to be conscripted to fight in Vietnam, which in turn had a profound effect upon him. His career has continued throughout the years until today. Right through his story, he's willingly shared his life with us, his personal journey, in fact, and his observations of both life in general and the arts specifically. We pick up with Normie talking about his thoughts and feelings about what happened to Vietnam vets. You couldn't go through such an intense period of your life and not be melded with the people with you.
I don't think so. Yeah. I don't think so. I always likened it to being in a sporting team. You finish your year, good or bad, and you go away on a holiday somewhere. You know, that footy team holiday thing. And you always remember that.
Oh, yes.
Don't you? You always remember you went away with the cricket team or the footy team or the netball team or the, you know, and then heighten that with the element of life-threatening experiences.
Yeah.
Daily.
Yeah.
And then you have perhaps just a minor understanding of the way we feel about each other.
Well, I can sit here and listen to you and I can understand what you're saying, but I don't think I could ever understand how you feel because you'd have to have gone through it, I think.
Yeah.
You know, you can sit there and be logical about it, but I think unless you went through it, the emotional side is something you'd have to have experienced.
You know what else I get? For many years, there was this lateral appreciation. Like, the Vietnam veterans, it's a lateral. Second World War, that was vertical. Vertically lineal in chronology, if you like. And so our concept of Second World War, we had a problem with Second World War veterans at large because we weren't accepted as veterans.
No, you were not.
In fact, the word veteran wasn't used in Australia until us.
Mm.
And now it's funny, but the guys coming back from this insidious deployment that we've had over the last 10 or 12 years in the Middle East, where they just keep sending the same guys over and over and over again. Mm. You know, 8 deployments, some of them, and expect them to come back unaffected.
As rational human
beings.
Please. Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, we don't seem to learn the lessons, do we?
No, no. And they don't understand what the psychology, and the people in the military, especially the upper echelon medico people, don't know anything about post-traumatic stress disorder. I could sit here and argue the toss with them and they would be mortified how little they knew.
It is really sad. You come back from Vietnam, the world moves on. You're in almost a cocoon there of war. The Australian music scene moves on. How difficult was it for you to get back into?
I didn't even know that I wanted to be back in it.
Okay.
So it was really difficult. I mean, I was, as we all were, very much changed. But I just couldn't walk straight back in and become a bank jockey or a car mechanic, you know?
Yeah.
Even if I had the same support system I had before I went in, but I didn't have that either. You know, it took a while, and then Athol Guy from the Seekers, yeah, and John Ashby, who was their tour manager, formed his company and became a management company. And they said, well, you know, with all the polish and everything you had before you went away, you've got to do clubs in Sydney. And in those days, there were 1,100 clubs in Sydney and 1,800 clubs right through New South Wales, all taking 5 days entertainment, and most of them with big bands.
So we've gone, the cycle's gone round, hasn't it?
Yes.
From when you were a kid and it was all big band music to you actually being part of big band music.
Yeah, and I understand the big band mentality probably better than most people who haven't actually been in playing in a big band. So, you know, I get astonished at some people who think that they can go and sing Sinatra songs and pull a lot, you know. Anyway, I won't go into it.
Yeah, okay. But your career has actually picked up again, hasn't it? Not to the same way as it was. It could never be the same way as in the 60s for all sorts of reasons. But you've got a pretty good career today, haven't you?
Yeah, well, you know, you just keep plugging away and you keep developing. And I started to realise some years ago, if you want to be out of work, just play your originals.
Oh, God, I've heard that. Oh, yes. I've heard that so many times over the last few years.
Because the Beatles didn't. Mm. The Beatles didn't play their originals. They played covers, if you like. Well, their versions of previously recorded songs. Mm. And if you listen to their first three or four albums, you know, you'll find a lot of familiar
Absolutely.
Stuff that was familiar before
yes.
it was released by them.
Yes.
So I say to these wonderful, we've got beautiful songwriters. We've got beautiful performers, guitar, drums, bass, piano, keyboard players all over the place. Wonderful performers. Don't go out and get on the fringe and do stuff where people are not going to understand it. If you want a small audience, easy, become esoteric. You know, do something familiar and hide the esoteric in amongst it all. And then broaden the esoteric as people get used to you.
Yeah.
Broaden that new material and what you think you're about. At the same time, listen to these established songs and work out why they became popular in the first place and why they sustain today. Because if you can bleed some of that into your own songwriting, and stop saying he's not a true artist if he doesn't sing his own songs, then, you know, that's the way, when you put your show together, that's the way it'll work. The other thing is, we're in show business. Is that what you would call it? Would you call it show business?
Well, of course it's show business.
Okay, how many letters in show?
Four.
How many in business?
Seven?
Eight.
Eight, is it?
Right. Right, twice as many letters.
Right.
That's the ratio.
Okay, got it.
If you put 10 hours into the show, you need to put 20 hours into the business.
Into the business.
And if you don't do that, the young artists I see doing this are actually being successful. They're not sitting in some pub corner playing an acoustic guitar to backing tracks with people who are mindlessly getting drunk
and not listening
to what you're doing.
That's right.
You've got to entertain these people. You know, you've got to pull them out of their bored, whatever the opposite to reverie is, and drag them in with you. And the only way you're going to do that is to be familiar.
Tuned into Listen to Older Voices. Turning back time. Turning back time. Turning back time. Turning back time. Turning back time.
I'm Rob Greaves, and I'm talking with Normie Rowe. And Normie is talking about the importance for artists not to just get up and perform, but to get up and really entertain.
But you also have to have great posters. You have to have... You have to know how much money is coming in compared to how much money is going out. You know, you want to make a CD? Why? Tell me why you want to make a CD. What are you going to do with it once you've got it in your hand? What is this thing?
Oh, so many musicians I know have got garage fulls of CDs.
And the thing is, you just say, these kids come up, what is it that lights you up? What's your passion? I want to make a CD.
Oh, yeah. Okay. For what reason?
So why? Understand clearly what it is. It may very well be to mark a moment in your time.
Okay. That's fine. Yeah.
But be clear about what you're doing.
Yes. Talking about being clear about what you're doing, you're at a stage of life where you've probably lived more years than you've got left. But with that does come a certain amount of...
Geez, that would make me 140.
That's exactly right. But with that does come some experience and some wisdoms. If you had a bunch of young people in here today, what would you share with them? Could you give them something? Would you leave them with something to think about?
Well, first of all, if you don't have an intense fire in your belly for this, if you have no option, then stay in the business. Stay in the business. If you have no option but to be in the business, stay in the business. But if you're prepared to go and get a part-time job to support what you do, you're not dedicated enough. I know that sounds awful, but what I'm saying is this. You've got to find a way of making being in the industry work. Work in the industry. Work within the industry, because it's only in the industry you'll hear about the things that are coming up that you could perhaps be part of.
Mm.
You know, not serving coffee at some, being a barista in a local cafe. You're not going to hear it. LA is a great big freeway. Put 100 down and buy a car, and all the, and in a week or two, they'll make you a star. Weeks turn into months, how quick they pass, and all the stars that never were are parking cars and pumping gas.
Do you know, in another world, I would leave our interview there because I think that would be a beautiful way of ending. But I won't, because you've got a real gleam in your eye, and I think this, you've still got a spark in you, that you've still got things in you that you need to do.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, can you want to share some of those things that you need to do, and some of the things maybe if there's something that really bites at you, that you know, that makes you look at the world today and you want to spit it out of the
How much time we got?
We haven't got much time at all, sadly.
I promised you when I started that I would get on a soapbox. Okay.
Yeah, this is your soapbox.
This is my big passion.
Right.
And I'll illustrate it this way. In 1975, there were 61 live music spots on national television a week.
Right.
If that doesn't stun you...
Well, it stuns me because I know there's nothing today.
Today, you're lucky to find 15.
Well,
I'm being really generous.
Well, I would debate whether some of those are really music shows. I mean, they are by name.
I'm not talking about shows. I'm talking about single spots.
Oh, spots.
But a quick illustration. Don Lane show, there was three a night, two nights a week, there's six.
Mm.
Midday show was 5 days a week, three a day, there's 15. There's 21 already.
Yes.
21 opportunities for Australian artists to be exposed to the general public. Was taken away from us by federal government, which today, under the auspices of Simon Birmingham, suggests that the performing arts is not a vocation, and I quote, it is merely a pastime. Now, whether that's a Liberal or a Labor or a Green or any, yeah. Not one of those people have our industry at heart. And you know why? Because we don't.
Oh, that's an interesting thing.
We don't have our industry. We only have ourselves at heart. And it's been that self-centred nature, that personal centering of our entire world that's brought us to where we are today. You can't blame poker machines. Those venues were there when we had people playing in them. Why do the people not play in them anymore? Oh, I tell you why. Because the people don't put bums on seats. Those places have to pay for themselves. And the poker machines are actually paying. But we could get it back, but we've got to have exposure opportunities on national television, on our radio. This is our country. This is not the country that belongs to America or Britain. It's our country. They are our airwaves. We deserve to have our own culture, and our own culture being exposed to the people who live here. And when we do that, we will have not multiculturalism, we will have omniculturalism.
I don't think I've ever heard it put as succinctly as that before.
I live inside my mind. All I can say is when something's wrong, I go to the root cause.
Mm.
You know, a fish smells from the head.
It is a problem, though, when you've got your government, and sadly, a significant part of the population who don't see that the arts really is the soul of a nation.
See, one of your problems, you've got a problem. Oh. You're blaming someone else.
No, I'm saying.
When we start blaming ourselves and we say we can't live with it anymore, that's the moment that the change is going to happen.
How do you create a scenario that enlightens people? Because that's what it comes down to. It's an ability to look beyond the things you see in front of you. And that is part, we've talked earlier about the fact that, you know, respect and the value of things around us that our generation had and our parents' generations had, which seem to be lost today. For me, it all has this issue of an awareness of things around you. And yes, I do have a problem, and I have a lot of problems, and I'm not talking about personal problems, I'm talking about the problems I have with the world. And I think that I suffer the same frustrations as many other people, that you can yell for so long and you're yelling at a blank wall because people don't want to hear.
But the thing is, what we really need to do is our industry, the first thing we need to do is to become a bit cohesive.
Yes.
You know, any cohesion we might ever have had was with that lame duck organisation called Actors Equity. And now it, you know, might as well not exist.
Oh,
it exists for people who are on the ABC in the drama area.
Yes. Yeah, which is shrinking anyway.
Right. And they are doing, I've got to say, they're doing some great stuff. And some of the commercial stations, the drama area is really good. But that's been looked after because they were the squeaky wheel.
So that's the problem with the arts in general, they're not squeaky enough.
Well, they're monofaceted. When somebody says the performing arts,
well, that's true too.
You know, they're talking about somebody in the Melbourne Theatre Company or the bloody Australian Opera.
Mm.
But the arts is right down to this little kid who has been learning to dance for the last 10 years, and today is only 15.
Yeah, well said.
And this is Listen to Older Voices, Ageless Stories on Ageless Radio.
That's where the arts begin. And little kid comes up onto the stage and she's 4 years old and she says, I like to sing and I like to dance. That's where the arts, that's where they belong. And if we don't nurture that, it's going to die with us. And what better legacy can post-war baby boomers have than to leave an Australian culture in complete health?
Well said. And I think that is a great place to stop our interview. Normie, thank you very much for being on the program. It's been an utter delight.
Thank you.
Sarah, Sarah, what will be, will be. Sarah,
Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program. Listen to Older Voices is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program and is podcast to you through the Toorak Times and TAG.